So, you know, when you hear a question asked to Christ and he gives a kind of enigmatic answer, and you, of course, the answer that we receive, we try to analyze in our way, which is proper to any human being. But very often our analysis miss a point. Very often. I do that myself. And I read commentaries and I look back and say, I think the great guy missed a point. Our Lord said, you know, keep watching, be on your guard. You don't know the day and the hour. And then he says, and that day and that hour, no one knows, no man, fine, not the angels which are in heaven, neither the Son, but the Father. Okay? You don't know the day and the hour? It's an enigmatic question that has fed all the anti-divinity of Jesus throughout history. He's not God. He doesn't know the day and the hour. Lack of knowledge. You know. And then comes, this is why I say people miss the point. People who try to explain that said, yes, but he was in a human form. So he knows, but he doesn't know. But that's a split in the person. How could he know and doesn't know? It's impossible. I have said, you know, read. Oh, when he became human, he lost his divine knowledge. Well, then he's not God incarnate then. Are you with me? So what is the point? I kept tracing that verse. I remember for it actually bothered me. I looked at the 400 years where there was really a very heavy fight between the Christians and the Arians. The Arians were a group of people who denied the divinity of Jesus. And hear what each side was saying, and I kept saying, I think both missed the point. And one of my tutors used to say to me, when there is something bothering you, have a glass of whiskey. But, you know, I don't have enough money to buy whiskey. The cheap stuff will kill you. A glass of wine, maybe. But one day, I was praying. I said to Christ, did you know the day and the hour? What did you say that? What was that for? And then I said, now I know. Both parties who denied the divinity or tried to defend the divinity, both missed out the culture.
Missed out the what?
Culture.
The Semitic culture. That to know and not to know is not Greek, it's Hebrew.
To know and not to know is Greek, Hebrew.
You know?
No, it's Hebrew.
It's Hebrew. To know is Hebrew, but not Greek.
So you see, in Hebrew you say, I don't know. But doesn't mean you don't know. It means something you don't want to say.
So you're saying that he knew, but he didn't want to say.
Absolutely.
Because it wasn't the time for anybody to know.
Because, you see, there are other sayings which, obviously, he describes the day of his coming. He knows. In the book of Acts, the apostle said, when are you coming back again? He said, you don't know the days which the Father has in his authority.
Is that where he says, not until all have heard?
Yes, but you see, this is, you know, there is a culture, background, for many of the sayings of Jesus. If we can catch that, there is no more enigma. But there is an enigma because we are caught in the Greek analysis of things, which is fine. You can't ask a Greek not to be a Greek. You know, you can't ask a Western Christian not to be a Western Christian. But in the Semitic way, you know, like Christ on the last day of judgment, he will say to the people on the left, what? I don't know you. Well,
he knows them.
But, okay, in the book of Genesis, and Adam knew Eve. Means?
Sexual intimacy.
Are you afraid of the word sex? Okay, thank you. All the Virgin Mary. That Joseph did not know her
until
he gave birth. You know, this is the question of that girl slept with King David to make him warm. Disgusting, but never mind. You know, he did not know her. He's too old. So, now tell me, I don't believe in modern American, or not in English, certainly. In modern English, modern American English, you don't use the word no for sex, do you?
No.
Oh, to know. Oh, only when you want to make the point biblically.
No.
Know them biblically.
No. Commonly speaking among average American.
No.
No.
You see?
No.
So it is a culture that allows you three things we don't have in our modern time. To keep your dignity. I'm not going to share that with you because it's my own right, your dignity. Number two, it is very bad for you to know that some of the English jokes start with a joke and say, you don't want to know. You don't need to know that. Isn't that right? You know, I'm sparing your life. I am trying to avoid creating a problem for you. Okay? It's a culture. And number three, because you see, if you say something, that's Semitic. It's to be communicated, to spread. If you say something, that means you say something that needs to be spread, to be communicated,
retold.
To be retold. Otherwise, don't say it. But I don't believe that this is really part of the American culture, is it?
Well, yeah. I mean, we don't advertise.
Come on, tell me. Educate me.
One thing is, with it, if you say I have intimate knowledge of something, that implies the same type of meaning, but it could have double meaning.
Yes, but you see, Jeff, there is a way of talking, a way of communicating, a way of saying something specifically to be spread, and a way of saying something you don't allow it to be known.
You don't allow it to be known?
Yeah.
So that's different.
Yes, of course.
We use the expression, George, it's for public consumption or whatever. That means, yeah, tell it to everybody who cares.
So when you read enigmatic sayings of Jesus, think for a minute. What saved me is open the Hebrew dictionary and look at the verb to know.
To know.
It's here in the saved you looking for the Hebrew and the Greek, and I don't know if you read the handout.
So in other words, it's Semitic thinking. There's no such thing as confidentiality.
No, it's a Semitic way of communicating, yes.
You just don't say it.
You don't say it. I know it, but you know what? You see, there is something in Jewish culture. What do you gain if I told you? We talk too much. I don't know. Have you ever had a Jewish friend?
George, it's not just Jewish. There's a lot of people.
No, just hold on.
Just you.
No, I'm half. You know? They don't talk too much. You talk when it is necessary to talk. That's called wisdom.
That's not Jewish.
Not all Jews.
Really?
The little Jewish guy that owns it over in Nora, the dad of the guy that owns it now, you know where I'm talking about, in the Target Center, there's a wonderful real bagel shop in there, and it's been there for 35, 40 years. But the old guy that went in there, he went in there to buy it. I used to stop there on the way to work, and he wouldn't sell you a bagel until he found out how your day was going. How you doing? You know, and he's like in your face more anyway. So it's like New York, I mean, I sense great communication from Jews because they want to know how you're doing.
Yeah, but that's the craftiness of the Jews. Oh, yes.
Yeah, I thought they were, you know, just generally. Yeah,
right. So, do you people sit
down? Okay, let me put a question to you. If any one of us here, sitting here, you knew the hour of your death and the day. I won't ask you, don't answer me, how your life will progress. Will be controlled by that time, isn't it?
Yeah.
You will not buy things or sell things or... I think it can demobilize people. Right? Demobilize you. Mobilize. Demobilize you, because you see, the greatness of enjoying life is that you don't know when you're going to die.
That's actually a good point. I mean, when you look about the mystery of God and everything, you don't know, and everybody says, well, I want to know. The Greeks say, you know, you can't have evidence, and it's not real, but there's a lot of stuff you don't want to know.
Yeah, you know, it is precisely, there is a very nice joke. in the book of Genesis, and they were marrying and enjoying life till Lot get into the ark. Into the ark, because simply they didn't believe him. You know, enjoy life. You know, there's a man that you have to read in English. I think he's nice in many things. He said, do you know when you are going to die? No. Fill your glass with wine. Al-Khayyam, Umar Al-Khayyam. You know Umar Al-Khayyam?
Umar Khayyam.
Yes, the Persian guy. Okay, I like the man, you know, because he is the greatest hooligan in the world, you know. I don't know when I'm going to die. Fill the glasses of wine. Let us drink and enjoy the night. Maybe tomorrow we'll not see the sun. You know, capture the moment and drink and live it, because death could be standing at the door. But you know, the whole thing is that take your chance. You know, I think that's a terrible life. I don't like Omar Khayyam. Because, you know, this kind of chaotic life doesn't suit me. Because in the Psalms, there's a prayer which says, Lord, teach me the end of my time that I may apply that to my life in wisdom. You know, I say to myself, you know, simply because there are things that has to be done and we have to do it. So Christ will say to the apostles, not really for your profit, But I will tell you what's going to happen. You will see the sky and, you know, all the description of the second coming. In the Gospel of Mark, where we have this this verse. Are you convinced? No.
Of what?
Of what I said?
In order,
we can't argue with it. So.
You're not convincing.
So when people say to us that the words of the Bible aren't relevant to today's culture, in this instance, we have to have an understanding of the culture in which those words were presented to be able to translate that.
Well, it's a good point, my dear brother, but there is more emphasis on that than, you see, this again, you know, we miss the point. The point is that the culture has been used in order to highlight a relationship.
The Jewish culture?
Yes, so we catch the culture and leave the relationship. You know, the parables of Jesus are all of them based on the environment.
The parables of Jesus are all based on the environment.
Yeah, all of them.
Yeah, he told stories from daily life that they're familiar with.
There aren't any Samaritans, there aren't any Jews in New York. Are they?
Pardon me?
Samaritans. Yeah, but it's the Samaritans.
You know?
I
was preaching in a church in Cambridge called Saint Luke. Big church, attended by about 1,000, which is quite a good number in England. And it was the parable of the Good Samaritan, you know. As you know, in that nice, quiet corner of Cambridge, there aren't any Samaritans.
There are what?
There aren't any Samaritans.
There aren't any Samaritans.
There's no Samaritans. And then
you want to make it relevant.
Not to make it relevant. Just to catch the relationship. You know, when you peel the banana, don't eat the skin. The culture is the skin, but inside the culture there is the relationship. So I said to them, you know, you heard the gospel. It's about a black man who was in a pub. And he had a drink and walked out in the dark alley. And he heard someone screaming. A white man screaming. And after he saved him, he discovered he was from the National Front. The National Front are the British Nazis who want to kill all the black. But he called the ambulance and took him to hospital and helped him. That will be the application of the parable. How you do good to someone who does not belong to you, is not of your race or your religion or your ethnic background. That's the relationship. And then after I finished, the warden of the church came and said to me, "How dare you change the parable?" I didn't. You heard the parable in the gospel, but there's no Jericho. No one was traveling to Jericho. I gave you something similar, that you do good to someone you don't know. So there is certainly a cultural element in the entire letters of Paul. I mean, look about the head cover for the women. That's a culture. That's not a doctrine. But in some churches, I think still, am I right in saying that?
Yeah.
Some churches, no woman can walk into church without a head cover.
Yeah.
You know, that was a thing in the Episcopal Church when I was a kid. Does anybody still do that?
Some denominations still require.
You know.
Like Orthodox types? Or
no. The Orthodox do it.
Do women have to have their heads covered in the Catholic Church?
I don't know.
Used to. I mean, it used to be a thing.
It's a mixed church. Some do,
so
some
it doesn't
don't.
Always.
The people who seem to be more pious, you know, covered, others don't care.
But you see, in ancient Greece, we know that In ancient Greece, a woman who will cover her head means that she is married and she has a family. The woman does not cover her head is a prostitute.
Or unmarried.
Or unmarried girl. While the Jews, oh wait a minute. While the Jews, you have a man or woman must cover because of the glory of God. It's a different reason. The glory of God.
Oh, okay.
They cover their heads?
No, because the glory of God is so glorious that you cover, you hide, because too much for you.
Wear wigs.
No,
well,
that's the wigs those
for the married women.
Yeah, the Orthodox do, because they're covering their head. They won't show their own hair, but they'll wear a wig. So go figure how that came up.
There is something in history devastating. When a custom becomes a dogma, it's a disaster.
It's time for the cat story. Cat in the monastery story.
Yeah. Or you have to read your Bible once a day. You know, or you have to
tell a cat story.
The cat story? I think they know it. You know the cat story?
I always enjoy hearing it.
I don't.
You don't know the cat story?
Let's hear it.
I like it because I enjoy it. I even say it to myself. When I discovered that I am following a custom, and I made a custom a doctrine.
Made a custom a doctrine.
I love. It's about a monastery, and the abbot used to talk to the brothers, and the monks had a cat. And the cat would go between the legs of the monks, meowing, and ask to be stroked, you know. So the abbot said, you know, this cat distracts me. When I come here, put a ribbon around its neck and tie it to the stairs. In the meantime, the cat died and the abbot died, but whenever they have an abbot to speak, they catch a cat and put a ribbon around its head and tie it to the stairs before they speak. I like the story because, you know, why are you doing this? Well, you know, it's a custom. But the custom for what? You know, one of the things I enjoy is a chainsaw. Because I was once staying with an American family in 73. It was a big, huge tree. And the council came and said, it has to be cut because it is getting bad and it can cause an accident. And we'll cut for you for $500. And the owner said, $500? I'm not going to pay that. And he went and hired a chainsaw. And we helped him to cut it, you know. And, you know, that big thing, the chainsaw went through it. The speed, it was the first time to see it, actually. I was petrified. Oh my goodness. And Jesus had a chainsaw. I'm telling you. You know, meets the customs and the religious of the Jews. And then, if I was standing there, I'm a Pharisee, or one of those who studies the law, I would say, I never thought about it. You know? Do you know a parable that is so shocking? Really? That would be told to a mixed group, and it runs through every religious big tree of customs of Judaism, and even of Christianity today. You know one parable? I need just one single parable. You are amazing. You never use the chainsaw. Can you tell me a parable that like a chainsaw that Jesus told and it just swept all religion away?
Probably
The prodigal son. Our son is a catastrophe. You know, listen, it was an atrocity. Instead of being hidden, there was a banquet. You know, it is something that swept all the legalism, actually. And in some of the sayings, he said, before you offer your offering on the altar, go and make peace with your brother. Standing and saw that woman who had a penny. And he said she paid more than everybody. You know, some of these are honestly a chainsaw cutting through. And you know, we, by the way, we have been educated to be polite, politically correct also. We receive these things not seeing that it is really
drastic.
I think that, I don't know. It's like, you know, I wrote an article once, but in Arabic. Jesus is the best sniper.
Jesus is the best sniper.
He can aim at something and kill it.
You know, not he snipes at the heart of the matter. Not to kill, but to tell us what's false. You know?
Tell us what's false.
What's false? What's false in our life is the fact, why are you so greedy to know about my coming? Oh, listen, this is fantastic. Do you remember a saying of Jesus said, I will come like a thief in the night. I kept saying, my goodness, out of all the social images, only the thief. You know what's behind that? If the owner of the house
knows that the thief is coming.
He's coming.
He'll stay up all night.
He'll stay all night. But you know, I'll come like a thief in the night. So wake up. Stay on your watch. You know, the shocking images is not the thief is certainly not something very... Would you like to know anything about the thief? We avoid him. But he is a clever guy who comes at a time when you are not watching. So he takes even an evil image and apply it into something good. Did you get the last sentence?
Yeah.
Something good.
An evil image and apply it to good. Okay. Women were the most despised group in the society.
Until the Good Samaritan.
No.
Until the Samaritan woman.
Not only the Samaritan woman, in the parable.
The
woman who was looking for the dinar.
Yeah.
That's Jesus himself.
She was the one looking for
it. It's an answer to the Pharisees who criticized him for being good to the sinners. In Luke 15. They were murmuring and talk about him, and he said, I'll tell you a parable. Oman lost a dinar and found it. You know, it's incredible the way he is with us, but sharp. Cuts through. Now that article called Jesus Sniper has opened a hellfire on me on the internet. That's why if I put that in English, I think they will hang me.
Not George.
Well, is it? It's the Coptics that want to hang you, though, isn't it?
Well,
nobody's gonna hang him.
No, under the protection of the FBI, I think. You know.
Hey, we're there for you too, pal.
Okay. But
FBI's right next door, they're watching over
you. Yeah, they're next door to us. Yeah. They're hearing everything we say. Yeah. So, so here you are. Now, I know but I'm not going to tell you. That's Jesus. But I tell you what are the signs of my coming. I want to keep it as a mystery to keep you watching. Period. Anything else said by Christians and Arians are not really relevant to us. They come from a Greek background and they misunderstood the Semitic culture.
You said Christians and Arians.
Yeah, both of them. There's a big defense by Saint Athanasius of Alexandria, who is a Greek man.
Big defense by Saint Athanasius of Alexandria.
And I read it and I kept saying, I'm not going to include this. This is so bad for Christ. He says, you know, oh, well, don't forget that he put on a human body. And being in a human nature, he became subjected to the nature. You mean he lost his knowledge? This is very Greek. Anyway, let's move on.
Yes, thank you.
Any question? Now we come to something very juicy. Again,
I've been looking forward to the.
Again, why have you forsaken me? The cry on the cross on Good Friday. Again, you know. What is the function of this interrogation mark? Why? And what's the meaning of forsakenness? Of course, the easiest answer, way out, he was quoting the first verse of Psalm 22. While David was in turmoil, he said that. Okay? Well, that gives it the historical background. But why did you say that while you are crucified? I'm glad that it's a cry of innocence. Don't you say that in normal, even normal English?
Have I done to you?
You know, why are you doing this?
That is true. You know, you screwed up and, you know, you're catching.
A husband beating his wife, and why are you beating me? But, you know, was he forsaken by God?
No.
He says, my God, my God, why have you forsaken?
Yes. What is the cry? You know, the problem we have in the translation, while you have why, but in the Aramaic and in the Hebrew, lima, which means for what reason? What is the cause of that? Which means I am really innocent. And you have a lot of work on that. You know? Because, you know, you hear sermons that God the Father was beating his son on the cross, pouring his and anger and...
And he couldn't see the sin on him.
I'm sorry, that doesn't add up. A lot of reasons. Because, you see, in the first place, lima, what have I done? But who is beating Jesus? The Father or the Romans?
So you're saying that when he asked that question, another reason he asked that question was, for what reason have you forsaken me?
Yes.
Also, what have I done?
What have I done? But forsaken in Hebrew means three things. Absolutely clear, you know? I don't know. It doesn't sound like English to be forsaken. You know? It means, number one, I am bearing this on my own. Nobody else is with me. I am alone. I don't know if they use this verb forsaken for being alone.
More like cheated on and alone. It's like, you know.
Betrayed.
Yeah.
Betrayed?
Yeah.
If you are alone?
No, betrayed. You know, somebody walks away from you.
Yeah.
What did you say?
Betrayed.
Abandoned. Abandoned is better than betrayed, actually. Because betrayed has treachery in it, isn't it?
Well, I always thought that. This is just me talking now. I always thought that that meant that Jesus was really crying out because he felt God had left him.
Nope. No.
God couldn't have left him. The Trinity would have split.
No.
God could do anything. I thought that was part of his sorrow.
No, his sorrow was not
absent from
his sorrow was not coming from God. His sorrow coming from those around him. You know.
Is he talking about them forsaking?
Oh yes, absolutely. You delivered me to the hand.
Pharisees?
Yes, and to the Romans. You delivered me to the hands of my enemies.
Well, why wouldn't he know they would forsake him?
No, why did you deliver me?
Why did you deliver me to them?
Oh, okay, I've got you now. Okay.
Why did you deliver me to the hand of my enemies?
Okay.
And that actually runs through many psalms. Why have you forsaken me? You know? And if you read Psalm 22 to the end, at the end of Psalm 22, there is a magnificent song of glory and praise.
They know it.
You know, number one is very essential.
I'm bearing this alone. Number two.
You see, number two, forsakenness means not only I'm alone, but the people around me are absolutely unjust. You have that in the handout. If you read Psalm 22, if people are called like the dogs of Bashan, you know, the wild dogs who bites, you know. And number three, vindicate me. You have an echo of that in Hebrews chapter 5. Who in the days of his flesh prayed with loud cries and tears to the one to save him from death. And he was heard because of his piety. But because he's a son, he learned obedience. See? I never forgot a great sermon by Bulgakov, a Russian man. He said that this cry is the cry of atheism. That Christ uttered a cry on behalf of all the atheists who felt abandoned by God. You know, and I kept saying, well, we can accommodate that. Because, you know, sometimes people are in real turmoil. What have I done? Or, like the Psalms, why do you hide your face in the days of trouble? Remember? Psalm 13? Okay. You know a great psalm. The Lord is my light, my salvation. Right? Right?
The what?
Lord is my light and my salvation.
Psalm 27.
Yeah.
It's a good piece. Read it. Halfway through he says, hide not your face because my father and my mother have forsaken me, abandoned me. So if the Lord is thy light and your salvation, then why are you asking for God not to hide his face? Because God has the privilege to hide his face. I hide from you so that you may discover something about yourself. That is the Jewish commentary. Haven't you once being in a conflict, and then in that conflict you discovered who is your true friend? Has it ever happened to you? They all run away, except maybe one or two or three. Has this ever happened to you?
Well, that's an old bromide. You know, if times are tough, you find out who your friends are.
Yeah. And I know we always say, you know, I thank God because for my conflict, because suddenly I started to learn who is my real friend and who is a false one. It is that instance where there's a cry of innocence. What have I done to abandon me? To forsake me? I hope that none of you will ever go through divorce. But when you go through I have been through it. You know, when you go through divorce, suddenly you discover the forsakenness. Someone who has been living with you, sharing everything with you for, I don't know, 5 years, 10 years, whatever. And then you look back and say, what have I done?
But where it gets muddy, though, is because now you're talking about a spouse that has left you, where the whole point of what you're talking about with these words of Jesus are that God didn't really leave him.
No, we talk about the culture background that allows you. I don't believe that in contemporary American culture you are allowed to question God. Am I right?
Question God all the time.
The question, did they deny him?
No, not to deny him.
Question him by and large. I mean,
the tendency is when you go through a big trouble or you have going through a hard time or something.
Why do people always blame God and not Satan?
People tell you, you know, oh, this is his will, you better submit, you know, and whatever. Whereas we don't have the boldness to say, why, Lord, you know. That's what
you said. Why me? That's a cry in the book of Job, by the way.
Yeah.
Why me?
Why?
And in the Psalms also.
Yeah. Well, that's what people say all the time.
What?
Why me?
Well, no, but whether they're Christian
or not. We're talking
about the Christians. You know, Christians usually, you're discouraged from questioning God.
Right. I've felt that before.
Yeah.
And, and almost like a judgment. And,
yeah, I feel that.
And sometimes it's not just with words, but like, you must not have enough faith.
Huh?
I have a friend who...
Carry your cross silently.
Yes.
Right.
No? But you see, in the book of Psalms, the cries constantly heard in many of them. You want me to show you something?
There's a lot of them in the Psalms.
Look, I opened at random. Psalm 4. At random. In English it sounds okay, but listen. Answer me when I call you, O my righteous God. Give me relief from my distress. You know what Hebrew means? You are not listening.
Answer me when I call you, O my righteous God. Give me relief from my distress.
You don't hear me.
And you know, there are so many psalms where there is a cry of despair.
Right.
You know? And you keep saying, why are you doing this to me? Not that I like, because I have repeated it 100 times. Psalm 10. Come on, young lady. Read it.
Do you have it?
Psalm 10. You don't have Psalms in that big book?
Yes, I do.
My goodness. What's that big four then?
10.
In the meantime, Psalm 5, listen to my cry for help.
Okay, so are we reading all of 10?
No, just verse 1, 2, 3.
Okay. Why, O Lord, do you stand far off?
Hmm?
Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble?
See? You know, have you ever been in that situation? Why you hide in time of, you know? But by the way, this is a cry of dignity and a cry of love also. If you don't love the Lord, you don't say that. You don't speak to your enemy in this way, do you? What's the word asham in English?
What?
Asham. It's not hope. It is, I don't know, there's a word in Hebrew and in Arabic that there is a kind of trusting in you. It's not trust, it is it's a mixture of trust and hope. That you don't expect that to happen to you. You know, what's asham in English? Psalm 13.
That's what I was just looking at. You want me to read that? How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I bear pain in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all day long? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me?
You see? There is that sense. I only have hope in you. And when things are rotten, I'm going to question you.
Things are what?
Rotten.
Rotten.
Yeah. Never being rotten?
There's a sense of expectation.
Oh, absolutely. And because you say, I love you, and I have the dignity to speak to you in such a way, because there has been a covenant of love. You know?
Where?
Between God and Israel.
Oh.
You know, you made a covenant, and therefore if things go wrong, well then, show me.
Does it say love? I mean, I don't remember a whole lot.
Chesed. Chesed.
Love. Goodness.
Remember, you will be my people and I will be your God, but nothing about love. Chesed.
Right? Chesed, yes.
Read Psalm 83. I'm just giving you examples of things that we Christians maybe are apprehensive to read them or even to use them. 83.
Ready?
Yeah.
Oh God, do not keep silence. Do not hold your peace or be still, oh God. Even now your enemies are in tumult. Those who hate you have raised their heads. They lay crafty plans against your people. They consult together against those you protect. They say, come, let us wipe them out as a nation. Let the name of Israel be remembered no more. They conspire with one accord against you. They make a covenant. The tents of Edom and the Ishmaelites, Moab and Hagarites... You would make me read this.
Yeah.
Saul and Ammon and Amalek, Philistia with the inhabitants of...
Okay, you know all that? A man praying on behalf of the nation. Hey, Peggy?
Yes?
He's praying on behalf of his nation.
And incidentally, that whole right there, that's all 1 Samuel 1 through 9. That's where they set up the whole thing with David and Saul and everything. Those are all the players of the people that they're trying to kill or be killed by.
The people on the chessboard.
1 through 16, but that's the front end of 1 Samuel.
You know, please, I really owe a great debt to my grandmother, who was so fervent to teach me the Psalms and to memorize them. Because when I memorized them, she said to me, one day, you will know that the cry that comes out of a desperate person is the cry the Lord wants to hear. And we were hearing, we were reading the Midrash Rabbah on the Psalms. And it says, only God can save you from God.
Only God can save you
from God. When there's a catastrophe and you have a covenant with God, who is going to save you? No one. And for her mind, was set up on the name Jesus as Yahweh saves. And Yahweh saves when there are troubles. Only God can save you from God. And I think, you know,
but that assumes that God is going to do something evil to you.
No. Evil comes to us from a variety of sources. But because we live under the covenant, why are these things happening to us? There's a lovely book written by one of the rabbis, forgot his name. Why bad things happen to bad people?
To good people.
Well, that's the Crystal Cathedral guy wrote that, right?
Yeah, it's a great book.
Why bad things happen to good people? You know, is that Robert Schuller?
Yeah, that's right. It's a great book. It has the Hebrew taste of it. But you see, in Christianity, and I'm really amazed, what's Good Friday is all about?
What is Good Friday all about?
Yeah. We say Christ being crucified. Excellent. Which is true. But look at the words that were uttered while Christ was crucified. This is one of them. Right? My God. But you know, there are other things in the cross, on the cross, with the cross. His care for his mom.
Care for his mother.
You know?
I thirst
has a Jewish background.
Everything is Jewish.
Oh, absolutely. No. I thirst because you see.
Jesus was Jewish.
No. Just hold on. Hold on. Slow down a little bit. If you go to betroth a woman, they offer you a glass of
wine.
If you drink it, it means you accept the girl. If you don't drink it,
there's no wedding.
So Christ drank on the cross because he was wedded to us. You have that in hand out. You don't read the handout, you people. I love you.
I did read that, but I just didn't understand it that way.
Well, it was one of the earlier ones where we talked about all the wedding symbols.
The wedding, yes. Yes.
Crown, you know.
And the quotation in the handout from even St. Augustine.
And a robe without seams.
You know.
So he didn't drink.
Well, the bridegroom wore.
No, he drank, tasted it, means I accept. Accept what?
Right.
Oh, slow down. I accept what? I accept to be wedded to the sinful humanity.
I accept to be wedded to the sinful humanity.
Where does this appear in the Old Testament?
Hosea.
Thank you, sir.
No, you didn't just come up with that.
Yeah, that's impressive.
No, it's here. And you know, to say that Christ is the bridegroom of your sinful nature is totally alien to us today, isn't it?
It was at our worst that he took us to the bosom of the Father.
You know, come on, people. Would you ever go and marry a dirty, filthy girl in rags with bad reputation, who's been a prostitute? Would you? Would any man do that?
Hosea did.
No. Not yet did God ordered him.
So would you ever? It depends.
You know, the incredible love of God in the fabrics of the New Testament is so alien to us that we try to give it a different interpretation. You know, even when I do the handout, I keep saying, would my American friends understand that? I wonder, but I will do it. Exactly, like I'm Sarasti.
Go back to what happened on Good Friday.
Oh, what happened Good Friday? You know, it is a wedding service. It's crowned, isn't it? It's a bridegroom. He's crowned, right? And when he was pierced with the lance. From which side?
Right side.
Why?
The rib.
Yes.
The
rib. Because of the creation of Eve.
Because what?
The creation of Eve.
Eve took a rib from his right side.
Oh.
But what came out of the of his body?
Water and blood.
Which is what?
Messy.
No. No. It is in the letter of John. Water and blood, because it is baptism and communion. You know, the whole scene is. Oh, wait a minute. Why there was a darkness from the third hour to the sixth hour? Darkness. But then, after the light came, the sun started to shine, Christ said, "It is finished." And he gave up his spirit. Why the darkness? What did he say? What did Jesus say about the darkness? He himself, in Gethsemane, "It is your time and the hour of darkness." It means actually everything came to an end. Condemnation being lifted, the power of death being defeated, reconciliation being accomplished, and now there's light.
So it was all finished there.
Yes.
It's finished. Reconciled the whole world.
I done my work.
Reconciled all humanity.
It is finished.
You know, and that's why when we come to Good Friday, I like to avoid the church. I'm sorry. I hear bad preaching sometimes, and I keep saying, "Why did I come to church in the first place?" I'll go. I hear sometimes blasphemies said by ignorant people. And simply, they never looked at the background. They never studied the turn of things. You know, brothers, sisters, divine love is unusual. And we cannot take it and domesticate it in our way. So we have to contain it and, you know, maneuver it here and there. But by doing this, we lose it.
We say God turned his face away from the sins of the world that were put on Jesus.
The cross. Yeah.
I mean, if the Father turns away from the Son, the whole world will not turn.
Yeah, and what do I have to look forward to?
Yeah. And you know, Bob, if that is true, Jesus could not have said to the thief, "Today you will be with me in paradise." Yeah. You know, it's a holistic picture. If that is true, he could not say, "Father, forgive them."
Because he was condemning every,
If he's being condemned, he cannot ask for forgiveness. You hear sermons.
Remember the song we sing? "You were condemned." What is it? Mm-hmm. "Oh, the wrath of God has been fulfilled," or whatever.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
The music is good, but the words are... The music is good, but
the wrath of God was satisfied.
You know, the music is good, but the words are really horrible. You know, not truly. The melody is excellent. You know, sometimes you have a great melody, but the words are really disgusting. You know, so it is. Listen, friends, the holistic picture is sometimes unusual for us, and instead of receiving it and discovering its depth, we manipulate it. It's like we have a man, I always say to you, when you are depressed, go to internet and type Nasruddin. Nasruddin is the holy fool in Persia and in Arabic. You know, he goes to see the king, and he never saw an eagle in his life. An eagle, you know, they use eagles and falcons for hunting. And he looks at the eagle and say, he's a very strange pigeon.
A very strange pigeon.
Why you look like that? Give me a pair of scissors. And he gets a pair of scissors and trim the beak and the claws and the wings and say, now you are a good pigeon. You know, the Bible is like a lion, and instead of letting the lion out of the cage, we lock him and say, you don't eat meat, you eat biscuits. And stop roaring, you know, because you're hitting my ears. And you better become a good cat, you know. Well,
domesticated. Yeah.
You know, I have seen...
God is so big, we have, you know, we can't figure out how he can love sinners.
But we have to. And that's what screws everything up, is that we totally think that our affection for each other is somehow what God's love is like.
Yes, and it's,
no, it's not.
I mean, we look at the world, we condemn every sin in the world. We condemn the sinners and the, you know...
Yeah. And Jesus didn't come to condemn. That's a fairly famous lie.
He didn't. But I love this. Right at when everybody was killing him, you know, that was the point where we were united with him. Yeah, I mean, it's incredible love.
But we don't get messages about divine love, do we?
No, why? It's not America, it's Britain.
What?
We don't.
Because some people say, "Oh, you only talk about love. You have to talk about sin." You know, it's sad because we have forgotten how deep the love of God is.
But you know, sometimes on the TV, I see great works done by good Americans. Shocking, really. What's the program you watch called the...
Oh, Undercover.
Undercover Boss. Have you seen it?
Yeah, Undercover Boss.
Yeah. The moment when a man gives $50,000 to a girl working in a...
Something.
In a burger shop.
Somewhere.
The way they are shocked. And they cry. Genuine, actually. Because the man who's standing next to them making the burger tend to be the big boss. One thing I really loved, he was dressed to work and he was cleaning the toilet.
Toilets, yeah.
You know? Cleaning the toilet.
There was a man who was a bad habit, you know. And then when he revealed him, he was terrified. And he said, I have decided to give you $3,000 to complete this, and $15,000 for the education of your son. He collapsed. The poor guy collapsed. You know, he's a big, big macho guy, you know, but he collapsed. And I kept saying, you know, you don't mean it. No, I mean it. And you know, our encounter with God will be even more than that. that all the bad ideas we had in our heads will vanish. And suddenly discover the reality and the beauty of God who truly loves us. You know? And you know, it is now a chance to know that before you get the big shock later on, you know. I always say, you know, the church throughout ages, from the apostolic period up till now, quarrel with itself over minor issues. If you are my brother and you disagree with me, even on doctrines, we should love each other. If we fail in that, we failed in everything.
The world will know.
That is a damnation, comes from John the Apostle. If you don't know love, you don't know God. Because God is love. I always, you know, I said, and I keep saying, okay. One of the students in Cambridge said to me, I dislike you, George. I said, it's mutual. It's mutual.
You didn't love him back.
Wait a minute. No. It's mutual. Because, you see, on the level of doctrines, you are wrong and I'm right. But on the level of Jesus, both of us are wrong. He collapsed. You know, on the level of doctrines, you know, I am right, but you are wrong. That's how we judge according to history. But when it comes to Christ, both of us are
wrong.
He really collapsed in a chair. And he said to me, you always shock me. I said, that's why you hate my guts. But, you know, it's my job to make you wake up. And one student, the lovely lady, and I can't forget her, she said to me, after I hear you, I don't know what happens to me. You turn everything upside down. I said, that's fine. And she said, how did you manage that? Said, I was just like you, walking all the time on my hand, but someone turned me, make me stand and walk on my feet. Who is that? I said, the most uneducated person in the world. Where is he? I said, he's dead. And I learned from him many things, but tonight, God help me. The last time before he departed.
That's Philemon.
I never wrote that actually, but I just suddenly remembered. I was full of sadness and despair, and we walked a little bit, and he said to me, brother, what is troubling you? Who is great, you or your problems? The minute you think that your problems are greater than you, there's no way out. Who is greater than you? You or your thoughts? Who is greater? You know, you are zero. But next to Christ, you are 10. Without Christ, you are zero. Let him take care of things. Give him a chance.
He hasn't resigned his job. He's still the Savior.
You know, give him a chance, you know. And you know, I recall things and I keep saying, my goodness. As he said to me once, too much education, George, made you trust your brain and your knowledge and you trust God. Really? And he said, yes. You read too much books and you think your salvation is in the book.
Hey, George, I know we have to go, but can I just tell you one quick funny little story about very verse when I, and I don't know if you remember this, but many years back when I was teaching Sunday school class here, and I was a friend in the class actually was adamant, like, she's like, you are wrong. God did leave Jesus when he was on the cross. He did separate himself. And when I left church, I called your house, and I'm telling you, I'm like, you know, this is the first time anyone's ever, like, just told me I was wrong and spoken up against me. And May says, George, who's on the phone? What's wrong? And George says to May, oh, it's Peggy. She got her hand slapped.
But you know, you should have said what Paul said. God was in Christ reconciling the world to himself.
Yep.
You know, snatching the things out, you know, one verse, you take it out, it loses its...
Colossians 1 is like huge.
Yes.
God is pleased
to well. Well, thank you. Pray for us.
Lord, we're so gracious to be here to hear your word and how you talk through each one of us, especially Dr. Mabala, Lord. We're so grateful to have your wisdom put in this man. Thank you again for the teaching and how we hear your word and how it molds and changes our lives. These things we ask in your name. Amen.
Thank you.